We're coming, and we ain't backing down.
We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror.
Everybody just do your job. You understand that?
Hey, will you shut up?
I'm bitterly disappointed with the officiating today.
Guys being dudes.
And they run through our like through a tin horn, man.
Split Zone Duo, splitzoneduo.com. Welcome to the Single Wing. Today is April 28th. We're going to talk about Hugh Freeze today. I think I started talking about the idea of a Hugh Freeze episode in October. Maybe earlier than that. This entire episode will be an exercise in trying to be ruthlessly transparent and honest. I think the first couple times I said anything on a podcast may predate SCD. I'm not sure. But the furthest back I can go in my very, very tired head is that I started to say things like, well, if he ever gets a job, I'm just going to unload on him, or I've got something for him. And I'm going to be totally honest with you. I never thought when I said it, it certainly wasn't a bluff, but I never really thought I'd have to do it. I never thought that I would be feel compelled to bring everything back out of storage. Literally, not metaphorically. I have a basement. It has plastic tubs filled with file folders and three-ring binders of depositions and NCAA documents that I'm still not supposed to have after all these years, and dug it all out. And so when I knew I'd end up having to do the episode, was right after Thanksgiving of 2022. And maybe a completely separate story, although certainly probably a more fun one to tell for me personally, was the, it's not a carousel story. It's just the story of it's a sentient rubber band in Lane Kiffin, who decides he's not going to Auburn after indicating for weeks, plural, that he was going to be the next head coach at Auburn. Just so you know. That'd be a fun one to unpack. That would be a fun one to go and to do the TikTok on. Journalism term, not social media. But once that happened, I knew immediately that Hugh Freeze was going to be hired by Auburn. To go back to that time, there was a sort of total commitment towards hiring Lane Kiffin, and because of that, the backup list was this really sort of ornery looking thing with names that just weren't compatible. It's like a comedy sketch bit where the guy or gal looks around the room and starts naming things that they see. I guess like a dumber version of the usual suspects script structure. Spoilers. Dave Clawson. Sonny Dykes. Just names that made no sense. Not an evaluation of their merit as coaches. Sense for the situation. Context is king. So it was really obvious that Auburn thought they were going to get Lane Kiffin, and if they didn't, they were going to go get Hugh Freeze. And it did not matter that Auburn's freshly appointed athletic director held the same position at Mississippi State during the Hugh Freeze saga in Mississippi. It did not matter. And that was the genesis. The more I sit and think about this, that was the genesis of why I felt so flabbergasted and exhausted. So that's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about my time with Hugh Freeze. We're even going to talk about why I waited and why I was frustrated. I'm not really frustrated anymore. There's a level of disconnect. You see things in life that are incongruent or that are wrong by your estimation. But really, occasionally, you see things that are so wrong in your perception and so inexplicable that you simply want to sort of scream and wag your finger. No, that cannot be. That's not, that can't happen. How is that happening? It's the basis of that incredulity that you start to expose your beliefs and you start to really dig in and either fight it publicly or fight it privately, internally. I already fought it publicly. I did it. When I was assembling various outlines for this and I was going to pull my old editors in, and I talked to a bunch of my friends and colleagues and said, well, I'm going to do this big Hugh Freeze thing. Depending on the level of conversation that I reach with these individuals, the same thing happened, which was I'm just doing the story again. I'm doing it. You can go read it right now. It's called Crooked Letters. And I worked my ass off on that story and had amazing help from a committee of people. But it was that, it was the realization that I was just saying the same thing over and over again that drew me to a level of frustration I did not expect. I really, really didn't expect. I went through and I looked at old notes and I listened to old audio tapes, and you know, there are some fun anecdotes, and as they come to me, I'll bring them up about Hugh Freeze. What I got frustrated about was not the lack of earth-shattering news, because if you listen to SCD consistently, or just even on social media, like follow me on social media, I have no, there's no silver bullet. There's no silver bullet that exists on, if you look at a person like Hugh Freeze and his career arc and what he's done, his behavior and how it's been rewarded, how he's been protected and how the system basically just sort of, I guess, shrugs. There isn't a bullet big enough. It doesn't work that way. If a school who objectively, empirically has better equity in the sport, is in a better place in the sport. Talk about Auburn here versus Ole Miss. If there's a school with a better position and more stakes, but more resources, but more stakes, and they decide to make the to repeat the pattern of behavior of the first school with everything that's publicly out there, right? The, calling the escorts on the university issued cell phone, which ultimately brought Hugh Freeze down. It was Capone and tax fraud. Because Hugh Freeze very wisely and smartly finally got really good lawyers to fight the NCAA stuff and really escaped scot-free. You can read it in Crooked Letters. He wins. He sends countless people to career destruction or shame, disgrace, various levels, myself included, and I'm going to talk about that today. But he wins. He would win completely and might have been in an Auburn-type place or maybe still in his first job had he not exercised the ignorance, hubris. It has to be ignorant. I don't think applies to something, to an equation as simple as Hugh Freeze, of just spending the $20 on the burner phone. But I've told that joke before, and I've told you this story before, and I've written this story before. And there's nothing more demoralizing than looking around and realizing that it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Because Auburn made the decision to hire this guy. So what new thing could I possibly bring here? What new thing could I say, either as someone, either on a podcast, as a podcaster, however we define that term in its context relative to media and the rules of journalism, or if I were to put the hat back on and go back out there and redo everything, what could I do? What information is out there that's previously unknown that would change the course of events? There isn't any. And this was a big thing for me on the path to acceptance. Because here's the spoiler. Hugh Freeze, forgiven. This is an exorcism for me personally. It's why I have fought talking about this Probably because I didn't know I needed to do it. And I'll walk you through the theory behind that and the feelings behind it. I want to be done with this because I realize now, after sitting and going through everything I worked on and talking to the people who I worked on it with, that I am carrying weight that my guy Hugh sure shit ain't. So it's time to let it go. And that's what we're going to do. But I set off in this winter to go and find new things. And some of that involved waiting. Because initially there was nothing in the Ole Miss information coming through that would shock you or surprise you or certainly change anyone's opinion enough or a rallying cry to unseat this man from his job. So I had to look at the Ole Miss information. Then I also had to wait because I understand Hugh Freeze better than most people. I really understand him now as I've sort of come to peace with a couple things. Hugh Freeze needed time to be Hugh Freeze at Auburn. And we've had a little bit of time. We certainly haven't even had a football season. There hasn't been a single play that counts with him as head coach. So we haven't had a lot of time, but for someone like him, you don't need a lot of time. So I went to find new things at Auburn. I went to go look at previous things at Ole Miss. Let's talk about the Auburn stuff first, because the Ole Miss stuff is more connected to things I need to get rid of. It would not surprise you at all that since his hiring in very late November to this is now very late April, that Hugh Freeze is doing the exact same things that you would expect. Okay. So, are you shocked when I tell you that Hugh Freeze has not left social media? What I mean specifically by that is, yes, of course he has public accounts, but at his hiring press conference in November at Auburn, the statements that he made to ESPN, who assisted in an operation to rehabilitate his image and spin his PR because of relationships that those reporters have with his agency, and then Hugh himself. This rebranding occurred where Hugh Freeze, who had so many gaffes and for some people tragedies, to be as insensitive as he was in the Liberty situation. This is going to be the first solo podcast that ever needs footnotes. But if you're here, I have to assume that you're abreast of the situation just to try and keep this ramble, at least trying to move in a linear direction. So, you know, it's one thing to have an ego and fight with fans on Twitter in the middle of a game week about a play call. It's another thing to go after Liberty students, to defend your athletic director's honor over claims of sexual assault that you almost certainly aren't privy to the details of. What an unforced error tactically. If we should be so callous for a second to remove the humanity and we're just one of those oily, evil consulting firms, to sit there with CAA and Jimmy Sexton and Hugh Freeze as this man sits at Liberty talking about it openly, right? Platforming Liberty to get back to the SEC. And he does this. He goes after a sexual assault victim. Why? Completely unforced. The time in which he does it is, we're talking years after the fact that he's been exposed for soliciting sex workers, massage therapists, whatever nomenclature you want to give. The litany of just sort of fool's errors in the recruitment process pre-NIL at Ole Miss. See also everything I wrote for 3 years, right? So we're not seeing a human being that's evolving. We're not seeing a person who's either wisening up, learning the hard lessons the hardest way possible. Some people are like that in life. Certainly we all have our flaws. But we're not seeing that. And then we're also not even seeing a person who's really able to be constrained. Whatever cage that Sexton and CAA and all of their infinite influence and resources, all the resources they have, their ability to snap fingers and get ESPN lifers to hand out sloppy blowjob redemption articles that duck and shirk any moral responsibility, Think about how powerful that is for a second. So with all these resources at hand, you're still dealing with gaffes, errors, unforced by the man himself after all this time. So he goes on, he does the mea culpa. Auburn orchestrates beautifully. Like, there's nothing not North Korean about that press conference. All right? If you were to tell me that, like, the backdrops that we saw of the crowd were actually just, like, wallpapered illustrations, like, I mean, congratulations. Excellent work. In order to get through this with a little bit of mirth and also just a little bit of sanity, I will flip-flop between pure cynicism and hopefully as much human empathy as possible. So I apologize. Hugh Freeze is hired by Auburn and says he's not going to get on a social media. Guess what Hugh Freeze has been doing? He's been on his social media. This should not be shocking. I feel like I'm breaking news, but I'm not. So from the course of late November to the course of late April, Hugh Freeze has jumped into the DMs, text messages, etc., argued with press over how things are being perceived at Auburn, specific transfer players that may or may not have come, may have come, left, been rumored, etc. I'm keeping a certain level of vagueness out here for obvious reasons. Would it shock you that he is still hawking his name? Would it shock you that he is still devoting an inordinate amount of time for a Southeastern Conference head football coach who is expected now to go and win titles, that he is still burning daylight, self-obsessing? No, it should not shock you, because he's doing this right now. I've talked with enough people in the last 3 months to be confident enough to stand up here and say this. If you receive this as news, I don't know what I can tell you. You have not paid attention. You have not read the manual on the Hugh Freeze that you hired, okay? Because he is doing the same thing. The same thing. Now, I want to pause for a second, because there's a percentage of this audience who cheer for, went to, believe in Auburn. And I want to make one thing clear as we all take our walk with Jesus here. This has nothing to do with Auburn at all. And I mean that. Look, there are Auburn behaviors, there are cultural norms that have probably made it easier for an aw shucks white man from nowhere, Mississippi, to kind of smirk his way through a non-apologies and assume a power role over young black men again. That's the South. It's not Auburn. That's the South. Everything I just said could happen anywhere in the South. And also, in a lot of places that aren't the South. This is not about Auburn. I want you to imagine for a second. Let's go back to the year 2003. This is one example when I was having a conversation with somebody, and I actually vetted it through some Auburn people. You move a couple pieces around in the fabric of time. Let's go to 2003. So Auburn's Tommy Tuberville's at Auburn. They're 8-5. There's a booster coup that's famous called Jetgate. They want to try to replace Tuberville, by the way, the former Ole Miss coach, with Bobby Petrino, former Auburn assistant. Now he's at Louisville. This is all known as Jetgate. You can Google it. So just imagine a different ending to Jetgate, because Tuberville obviously survives the coup and then goes undefeated in 2004 and like sort of wins a national title by those bizarre standards of the time. I mean, I guess you can give it to him. I don't care. So let's say he doesn't return. They don't go undefeated. None of that happens. Let's say Auburn hires Petrino. And this is the man that we know now, the man with the poet's eye for play calling and, you know, the machine brain in lieu of, you know, human emotion. That guy, Bobby Petrino. Remember him, like, with the deleted file where a soul would be? Like, he's into young volleyball players. He's into young girls that work in his office. That's not going to change just because he's in Auburn instead of Fayetteville. So inevitably, he's afforded the same privilege, right? The same indulgence, I guess, that he was at Arkansas. So for that reason, maybe there's like something on the field, whatever. He either gets fired or, as we know from his track record, he can't last by the standard that Auburn wants. Because in this timeline, Auburn hasn't gone undefeated in 04. It's very possible. Like Arkansas in our timeline, like Louisville in our timeline the second time around, like Missouri State in our timeline. Who knows what's going to happen at A&M this fall? It's very, very, very likely that in this situation, Auburn hires Bobby Petrino and it does not work out. So let's imagine that Auburn goes to market like around 2005 or maybe even 2006 and they hire Nick Saban. I came up with all of this to try to calm Auburn people down to get through the rest of this conversation, by the way. So let's say they hire Nick Saban. Why wouldn't they? And why wouldn't he? Okay, 7-time, 8-time, 9-time national title winning Nick Saban of the Plains. This is not an entirely insane idea. I moved one piece around in history that was almost going to happen anyway. Now, I want you to think in this scenario I just painted you. I want you to think about how Auburn has behaved in our timeline. And now I want you to think about what you know about Alabama. Whether you're a young person or not listening to this, I've told you enough times on this show how Alabama used to be like, okay? So I want you to imagine the links of this Alabama and my situation. How far would they go? How far would they go to fight, to match, to undermine, and fail in all of those endeavors against Nick Saban? Because that's what's happened in our lifetime, in our timeline, with Nick Saban versus Auburn, right? Auburn's crazy. Auburn made themselves as crazy as anyone else did trying to break the Nick Saban era in the modern era. That's it. The names of these schools, they're not particularly important. I hope that's calmed you down if you're an Auburn fan. Because now I want to tell you what you've gotten into. And I want to tell you why I have to, of all behaviors and actions, forgive this dude so I can move on. Hugh Freeze is still arguing with media. Hugh Freeze is still lying to people. Hugh Freeze has still yet to publicly or privately apologize to a litany of people whose careers he dramatically negatively affected, whose livelihoods he dramatically negatively affected. Yes, me included. He has not changed at all, okay? He is consistent. I want to talk about his consistency for a second now. If I tell you that he's still mad about what someone said about Spencer Sanders, and he's still mad about what someone said about offensive development going on in the spring of 2023. That's the same man as 2013, as 2015, as 2017. If you can accept that, then hold my hand and walk with me for a second. So this is you're getting that man. You're getting the man that you told us you wanted in the press cycle, which was the man who beat Nick Saban, because that's what we're actually getting at, right? And I'm going to tell you at the same time, you're also getting that other man who beat Nick Saban, okay? And he did. You got that guy who beat Nick Saban. And at the time he did it, when he did it, at a different kind of school, it was incredibly rare. It was. At the time that he beat Nick Saban back-to-back, it was basically unheard of. And before all of the scandals and all of the NCAA stuff, the off-the-field stuff, the just sort of base level scorn he earned as being reduced to, as a public image, as a public brand, a sad, horny, middle-aged man. He had that accolade. He had that chip. He had that pound of gold. He did. It's why he's still here. That's you wanted him. You got him. That's what you wanted. And he did it at Ole Miss. And that's what I keep hearing. This is why he's back. Well, he did it at Ole Miss. We'll get to that context in a second. I want you to also know that this is the man you wanted, because when he beat Alabama in 2014, he went 2-3 against ranked opponents after that game. He scored 7 points against LSU and lost that game. He lost 42-3 to TCU in the Peach Bowl because his players could not be found at bed check. His key players could not be found at bed check the night before. It wasn't, as it was sort of massaged at the time, that they're focused on recruiting, because what does the Peach Bowl matter to Ole Miss? They didn't get in the national championship. That's what they're focused on. Which was a real narrative that was propagated at the time. That Ole Miss wouldn't give a shit about playing in a Peach Bowl. That same team that beat Alabama lost 30-0 at an unranked Arkansas. That happened. And next season, Ole Miss beat Alabama. They beat him in Tuscaloosa. They beat him in Tuscaloosa. That's why you hired him. Of course, they lost to their next ranked opponent, to Florida, by 28 points. And then they lost at Memphis. And because of that win at Alabama and some truly bizarre shifts, temporary some, in the landscape that year, they were alive for the SEC West, mainly because when you lose to Memphis, it doesn't count on your conference record. And they lost 52-51 to Arkansas. Google that one on YouTube. Find the YouTube clip of that. When you talk about consistency and quality, and the guy who beat him twice, that's who you hired. That was the best man available. Hugh Freeze was 2-3 versus Saban. That's a 400 winning percentage. Gus Malzahn was 3-5. It's 375. I just want to point that out to you. And remember, I said all that nice shit about Auburn, okay? I start pointing out the differences, or the similarities, rather, between Gus Malzahn and Hugh Freeze. It's pretty hard to find. The only differences are character-wise. I'm going to be honest with you. So I want you to see. That needs to settle in. Hold my hand. Gus Malzahn also won the SEC West in the league multiple times. Hugh Freeze never did that. Coached in a national title game. Hugh Freeze never did that. Freeze was 3-5 as a top 10 head coach. A lot of people have shrugged this off because Hugh Freeze needs the Auburn effect. He was at Ole Miss. Right? During that hiring cycle, all through December, as his character was being massaged, it was, well, he imagine what he would do at Auburn. It's such a stratospheric leap. It offers more resources. It has a higher football ceiling. The problem here is that, from a football sense, it's not that Freeze struggled to beat teams that were really good, or secure talent that was really good. You could do those things at Auburn. He did them in Ole Miss. The problem, hold my hand, because you're going to get scared, is that he couldn't say, there was no consistency. He couldn't say, stay consistent. That's what you want. I know you. You want Alabama and you want Georgia. Those are your two rivals who have so far eclipsed you that you sit as a footnote. You are Missouri with more history, and you hate it, and it has driven you mad, and I understand that. I get it. I have spent every waking moment of my life talking myself into the Atlanta Falcons. You don't have to feel bad about being an Auburn fan. You probably will, but you don't have to, and you certainly don't need to explain it to me. You wanted consistency. He can't stay consistent. 41 points against Bama, 10 versus Florida. Then you lose by 13 at Memphis. This is what you purchased. This is the person that you purchased it from. To review, everything I just said was about football. And the prevailing logic from the Freeze apologists and the manufacturing that happens at CAA via large legacy media, I just sort of combine with, kind of like the general, I would say, accepted standards that exist in the talk radio message boards. you wanted Hugh Freeze because he did those things. And I told you the other football things that came along with that. And I've also told you that Freeze is consistent in his behavior. Okay? There's nothing that you can say or show, aside from quotes to Chris Lowe, that would indicate Hugh Freeze is a fundamentally different human being. So this is what you got. He's consistent. Now, you've also told me, well, don't worry about those Ole Miss things that happened, because those aren't Hugh Freeze. That's a level cap from Ole Miss. That's just the problem that exists when you try and build a quality roster at the University of Mississippi instead of Auburn. Okay. Okay. All right. You're betting that all Hugh Freeze needed was a bigger platform to be more Hugh Freeze. I'm telling you, all Hugh Freeze needs to be more Hugh Freeze is a bigger platform. You don't expand one without the other. It's happening now. It's going to continue to happen. He's mad about criticisms about his offensive scheme, play calling, portal transfer. They're small right now. There's enough people on the plains to tell you I'm lying. We'll talk about institutions telling you who's lying and who isn't, and the truth that comes from institutions in a second, because it dramatically shaped my career. I'm telling you what you're telling me, but you aren't listening if you're an Auburn fan. The rest of you are probably just standing around to see what happens after everyone drinks too much on Thanksgiving. And that's fine. That mentality has spawned a cottage industry of college football coverage. We used to call it Banner Society, so I'm fine with that. In 2020, in the weird COVID year, it was obvious that Freeze was going to be a better play caller than a better head coach. I'll give him his flowers. Than probably an institution like Liberty, generously described as a G5 independent neophyte program, dumping dirty cash into college football. He's too big for the place in terms of what he could build, and obviously he wanted to get back to the SEC. That's fine. So he talked to Sports Illustrated, and I'll be honest, it's a totally fine piece. I think there exists a mentality amongst really good human beings that they need to toe some incredibly invisible arrow straight line of a sort of silent, thoughtless fourth estate. I can't do that for reasons largely informed by this experience, this large experience. Anyway, so I want to clarify that not every time Hugh Freeze speaks to the media or someone decides in the media to talk to Hugh Freeze that there should be at fault for that. This is what we have to accept. These people like Hugh Freeze, are going to have outsized influence, and they're going to draw interest, and that's, I guess, still part of the media's job. That's fine. In the Sports Illustrated piece, Freeze says he's made, quote, peace with the past, and he's frustrated that others have not. I literally have to stop reading for a second, because as much as I have worked on this and thought it over and written a bunch of outlines and had conversations, the gall of that statement inspires such a pain, physical pain in me, that through my own personal interpretation of faith, I can only forgive them, or else it feels like a bomb inside that will kill me and or just turn me into a bitter, bitter human being. And I have too many responsibilities in my life to live as a bitter human being. It's still really, it elicits a physical reaction when I read that. Quote, I'd love for you to tell me when people will get over it, he said in 2020. I think 80% of them are realistic and say, dude, he's made a mistake and paid a price. Good Lord, let him be. and there's another 20% that will never be over it. To my knowledge, I've tried. With anyone I could, I made sure they knew that if I hurt them, I was sorry, but it's time to move on, he said. How many times can we write about it? How many times can we talk about it? I said I was wrong. I paid a price. My family paid a heck of a price. When can we move on? This is how it happens. Not just from one Sports Illustrated profile, but this is how it happens. It's sort of all in concert. This is how it works in the business. The idea is presented that Hugh Freeze has suffered. And while there may be fact to that, because I cannot slight a person I would view as my enemy, I cannot technically devalue their suffering. It's not within my, or it's not supposed to be within my capacity in a faith structure to do that. Right? But the idea that he has suffered alone or that he has suffered most, this is how it works. Because that phrasing implies that his family is hurt by the outside world. The beauty of that quote from the cynical PR perspective is that that phrasing, and I'll read it one more time, is my family has paid a heck of a price. When can we move on? That's a brilliant delivery because that phrasing implies his family is hurt by me and by you, the outside world, and not Hugh Freeze. It doesn't say that he apologized to his family. He said he was wrong. What is he wrong about? Complete the sentence. There is no specific noun, object, that accompanies the wrongness that he confesses to in any fucking media he's ever done. Any at all. I'm not angry that this is happening from him. It's that it's happening, and this is how it happens. It's just happening. My anger still exists because we're pushing the conveyor belt of this man's rehabilitation in public, and I don't know why. I have to let that go and still maintain the intelligence and the sanity and the moral, I don't know, compass, I guess, that I have to see. I can't stop asking why and forget to ask why. But I also have to be at peace with the fact that it's not going to make any sense. So this is also victim shifting, especially when you consider the fact that the only publicly acknowledged reason that the, quote, pain that his family has felt are the escort calls that were made public by the attorney of a vengeful Houston nut. Because Freeze lied about him, too. Strange bedfellows that we all have. Houston Nutt being a victim here too, but he was. Freeze has never apologized for anything to do with Houston Nutt. He has never apologized for with anything to do with the mismanagement of his Ole Miss program, with the individuals that he lied to. I'll get there in a second. As far as we know, the only thing that he's ever apologized for publicly was that he hurt the pain that the family is suffering. I guess because people still don't like you, Freeze. That's how he managed to manipulate that SI article. He can't apologize. Let's just cut around it. I'm not even going to do a dance here. Okay, Freeze has never apologized for these things. If he were to apologize, it would be a tacit admission of guilt. It would be him saying, hey, I did these things that I skated past in fake NCAA court, for one. And it would probably open him to civil litigation that I can't fathom at this moment, but has been joked about for a long time. So he will not do this. The only thing I can follow, the only thing I can find is this one public apology of any merit. And that is Chelsea Andrews, the Liberty student. In 2021, Andrews, of course, is the sexual assault survivor, revealed that Freeze sent her the unwarranted, unsolicited, direct messages on Twitter, defending Liberty and former Baylor AD, Liberty AD, Ian McCall. Andrews had publicly criticized him for his handling of sexual assaults on campus. Of course, she was part of the lawsuit that has, I think, 20 plaintiffs, going through my notes. This was against the school, and this was about mishandling sexual assault accusations. To my knowledge, as I record this, the Department of Education is still, I mean, you don't rely on the federal government for expediency in anything, but there is still an investigation going into Liberty's handling of these accusations. Specifically, the quote is, "You don't even know Ian McCall," Freeze wrote. "He's the most Jesus-like leader I've ever seen or been around. You take every chance you can to take a shot at him. I don't understand that mentality." Woo! So the only apology that I can find, other than, like, my wife is a rock, which is, like, this sort of, like, incredibly stupid alpha male-brained way of saying, like, I put my dick in something I wasn't supposed to, is by, like, a backhanded compliment to your wife. It's amazing how long that's been a successful play. The only apology that I can find was via the sympathizer when he does the piece with ESPN's Chris Lowe in November of last year. And I want to be clear about this, and I'll tell Chris this, is in my professional and personal opinion, this is a one-stop credibility car wash of an effort. This is press release boilerplate for Jimmy Sexton's clients. Freeze offered this mea culpa. "I learned from this situation that I should totally understand other people's circumstances first before communicating or commenting on someone's situation. It was an inadvertent misstep with no ill intent, and I am sorry." I will bet you $10,000 that he did not say that into, like, a tape recorder sitting at a table. People don't talk like that. Hugh Freeze doesn't speak like that. You've heard Hugh Freeze talk over the years. I've heard him talking to my phone quite a bit. He doesn't. That's not the cadence. That wouldn't be the word choice. That's that. And the reason I point this out is that was clearly crafted to be inserted into the article specifically, and was obviously done willingly by the writer. So maybe he apologized and he believed it. But I think the totality of his career strongly suggests scheme over sincerity in any instance. So this incident, of course, was so chronologically close to his return to the SEC. And it's possible he did this because Sexton just said, "You have to fucking do this." Or maybe because of, like, you know, unlike the multitude of NCAA allegations that were either against him or against him by proxy, one of his assistants, the program overall, at the height of his career, this was even a more inarguable proof of misdeed, maybe just in the public court of opinion. Maybe. So maybe this time he was dead to rights in a way that he wasn't last time. I guess that's the logic. I guess. He doesn't apologize. He's consistent. We can talk about Briarcrest for a second. Of course, Briarcrest Christian School in Memphis starts his career. There were claims that he acted inappropriately around female students in the late 90s, the early 2000s. The reporting at the time said he demanded that one girl change out of a Grateful Dead t-shirt, and it violated the dress code in front of him. And then he also paddled a student, according to USA Today. There's a quote here. "Freeze, he did some bizarre warm-up taunt before actually making contact," said the woman who spoke to USA Today Sports on the condition of anonymity because she said she fears reprisal. "I was humiliated that he didn't have a female in the room." He didn't even acknowledge that stuff. So there's no apology there. Okay. One of my favorite anecdotes about Freeze, it's less known, it's less public, and it's also less severe than the things I've just talked about harassing sexual assault victims online and the allegations of gross misconduct towards minors as an authority figure in a school. But this was one we kicked around privately at work for a long time that I'll share with you. In December of 16, to place this in your brain in terms of the Freeze saga, he has beaten Alabama twice. He has had those up and down seasons that I detailed, and now the NCAA is pressing down publicly. Okay. In December of 16, a staff writer at the time at SB Nation named Morgan Moriarty, she was working on just a blog just a post, for lack of a better term, which was based on a roundup of interviews that Bud Elliott, former co-host at PAPN, now at 247. Bud was at a December recruiting event, okay? this was during a time, it was between Christmas and New Year's before like bigger bowl games were starting. I was off. A lot of us were off. It was like a, you know, you squeeze the family visit in college football if you can, especially in our, like SB Nation, we didn't have to staff events quite the same way. So we had a little bit more flexibility. I just remember I was not at work. And Morgan is on the clock. She's doing this roundup thing to post. And there's an exchange that she writes about. Now, Bud was at the event. Bud's asking the questions. I know this gets a little squirrely. So he's there with the tape recorder. Bud's giant phone, shout out. And there's this exchange that's recounted to Bud by a recruit named Chevin Callaway. So Chevin is telling Bud about what he had said back and forth with Ole Miss, who was recruiting him. So the Bud asked this question. This is Bud asking the question. We've heard a lot about negative recruiting at Ole Miss with the NCAA thing going on. What has Ole Miss said to you about that? Okay, I'm going to take a breath because I'm going to read this verbatim. This is the quote. And you'll probably remember this if you're a recruit, Nick, or you followed every bit of the Freeze saga, but this might be news to you. Well, Coach Freeze told me when you're that big and out there with faith in Christ, he's like, what do you expect? Jesus got nailed to the cross. So he was just telling me, sometimes things like that happen, but that's never going to change how he's going to treat his players and take care of them. Even if, I don't know if he really did make the mistake doing what he did or not, but I can just tell he's a good person, great person. I know they're looking at maybe a bowl suspension. I don't know what they're going to do, but I don't think that'll affect anything as far as how he treats his players and stuff like that. That was the quote. We run that like a Q&A. So everything I just read goes up. Freeze lost his fucking mind. This goes up, even in a slow period, finds viral footing. And I mean, come on, this kid says it dead to rights here. When you're big and out there with faith in Christ, he's like, what do you expect? Jesus got nailed to the cross. Okay, so that's where we're positioning ourselves. Freeze, of course, to his credit, recognizes immediately how terrible this looks. So he does what he does. And this is the Hugh Freeze you've never met. The all shucks hand wringing guy, the faith in Christ, hitting up, you know, you're so Christian, there's three Wednesdays. You ever heard that? You're so Baptist, there's three Wednesdays? Meaning like you go to church so much in the week, even before Sunday. Like, it's usually you're so Baptist, you've got three Wednesdays. That's Hugh Freeze, right? He took to immediately bullying the absolute shit out of the writer, Morgan, and the outlet, us, via his SID. Of course, he claimed that we were wrong, and that was false. The problem is this. He contacted SB Nation and said, via the SID, and the initial quote, the initial claim was that the quote was wrong. The kid got it wrong. We got it wrong. They did a twofold attack. He didn't say that, and you wrote it down wrong. They wanted to throw the blanket over the shit as fast as possible. He was furious. Pause for a second. With everything that you know about Hugh Freeze, do you think he said it? Do you think this Callaway kid made it up? Who, by the way, is trying to get recruited, trying to go play college football. Do you think he made it up? What does it sound like? I want you to figure out who you believe in this scenario first, before we go on. Okay. They make Callaway get on Twitter that night and claim that he was misquoted. The problem is, don't fuck with Bud, because he keeps receipts on literally everything. He went to law school. His receipt in this case was raw audio. And we handed it back to Ole Miss that night. To his SID, to Hugh Freeze. That didn't stop Freeze. That didn't stop Ole Miss from trying to bully Morgan into removing the quote that Bud got at the event. I think it was about 5 p.m. on the 28th because I was able to go and dig up this correspondence. I was on vacation, called in to say, like, hey, we've got this crisis, da-da-da-da. I think Ole Miss didn't understand that Morgan wrote it up out of Bud's quotes from the event, because if they had, they probably would not have tried to challenge us outright to say we were making it up. My favorite, this is how Freeze works. I'm dealing with the university, who I've obviously dealt with for a long time. We'll get to it. Out of nowhere, and I believe this is the first unsolicited text, maybe the first text ever that I get from Hugh Freeze, he tells me it just simply has Callaway's number. He texts me his number, and he says, you need to get in contact with him to get the accurate story. Then this kid magically tweets a denial, like minutes later. What is being reported is not what I meant. Coach Freeze wouldn't make that comparison at all. And he tags Freeze in it. What the NCAA figured out, even though they couldn't really get him in NCAA jail, but look, I'll give some of those enforcement agents credit. What Ole Miss finally figured out at the very end, way too late, is what Auburn needs to hear now. You have to call him out. We told him we wouldn't issue any retraction. We wouldn't edit anything because the quote was verbatim from the audio. And they just simply disappeared and act like it never happened. That was it. We didn't take it down. We didn't change it. I think we updated it with the tweet. And that was it. This is a small example of the real behavior. You can pause now for a second and you can absorb how this man platforms and weaponizes faith. You have to figure out where this affects you in the spectrum. Maybe you are literally next to him at the pew in his flavor of non-denominational Christianity, or maybe you are on the opposite end of the spectrum and you are some aggressive atheist. It doesn't really matter. At least in terms of identifying the effect and the intent. I don't think you have to have a credibility or an alignment near his faith to understand what he's doing. But then also to understand the affront and the sin, let's be honest. To weaponize faith is a sin. Okay. When Ole Miss unraveled, he never admitted to any wrongdoing, ever. Tactically, obviously, he was trying to prevent any sanctioning from the NCAA. He wanted to pivot jobs, although is it a pivot if you're unemployed? I don't know if that's a pivot, because you have to pivot from standing to something. Anyway, he was already fired because of the escort stuff, because of the lie he told initially that the violation were Houston Nuts. Again, if I'm jumping around or you feel like you don't have the context, I can't imagine you listening to this without reading Crooked Letters. It's still up. You can go read it. Literally just Google Crooked Letters SB Nation or Crooked Letters Godfrey or Crooked Letters Ole Miss. So obviously he's trying to prevent the NCAA from affecting his career. So he's not going to apologize to anything. It's not going to happen. In the process of Ole Miss falling apart in the Freeze era after he was already dismissed for the escort text messages, he sold out multiple assistants essentially by inaction. And the university, of course, rallies around us. You know, everyone assumes a protective stance. It's what happened in nature. It happens in biology. Like, self-preservation becomes the front of brain executive function. That process, of course, affects the careers of the assistants, Chris Kiffin and Barney Farrar, the most. They receive show cause penalties that push them out of college football completely. Chris Kiffin, I think, is still in the NFL. Barney Farrar is still suing and trying to get back into college coaching. He's a junior college assistant right now. He still has a lawsuit against the NCAA all these years later. Freeze got a 2-game suspension. So let's get to the meat of this thing as to why I'm personally affected by all this, and also why I need to talk about it and release it. I can't construct anything that's going to convince anyone in power why this human being doesn't deserve to be the head coach at Auburn. That speaks more to college football than it does about me. And I have to repeat that and interrupt the flow of this to sort of keep myself in a grounded space. So I, along with multiple other outlets, published a story at the height of the NCAA saga with Ole Miss that was fueled 110% by lies told to me from Hugh Freeze and the University of Mississippi, which happens to be my alma mater. I've never said this out loud before. The misinformation that I published, along with almost every other major outlet in America that covers college sports, it wasn't just me. Those lies were created specifically by Hugh Freeze. Absolutely. I'm telling you this now and held it in my pocket for years because the goal always was to sit down with Freeze. I spent hours on the phone, literally hours on the phone with Mr. Jimmy Sexton. And on the eve of the completion of foul play, because Freeze knew there was a documentary out there, and Freeze had once again got his wick stuck, got caught, because Freeze had been trying to politic for himself, not Ole Miss, for obviously just for himself, with me off the record on the phone almost daily throughout the production of that documentary. For his blindness, his tactical blindness in so many areas, he usually can smell things coming. And I think it was obvious now. He was never going to sit down on camera. He was never even going to sit down just in the capacity of a reporter for Crooked Letters, the written piece. It was never going to happen. But he knew that I was coming for him specifically. He figured out maybe I just wasn't a good enough poker player, that I was among the scorned. I was among the wronged. And I was going after his ass. Because I was going to ask him specifically, how is it that myself and all these other national respected journalists, reporters, outlets, how did we publish this wrong statement? How did this happen? I'm going to read this part of Crooked Letters out loud. I could have just read the whole fucking thing, but I'm not going to do that. By the end of the 2015 season, the Rebels were closing in on their first Sugar Bowl in decades, just as the NCAA finished framing its notice of allegations around Lindsey Miller's statements. Entering the 2016 signing cycle, Freeze was now recruiting players to an established national power. That is why Ole Miss kept right online. On January 22, 2016, the school received its first notice of allegations, NOA, from the NCAA. The NOA detailed a total of 13 violations against the Ole Miss football program, 9 of which the NCAA alleged to have occurred during Hugh Freeze's tenure. A week later, multiple media outlets, including SB Nation, reported that Ole Miss sources believed. This is the important part right here. I'm going to reread it. This is it. This changed my life. A week later, multiple media outlets, including SB Nation, reported that Ole Miss sources believed most of the major violations were not related to Freeze's tenure. In fact, these sources said, most of what the NCAA was alleging had happened under Houston Nutt. So this is what I reported at the time, specifically. One Ole Miss source tells Stephen Godfrey they believe that only 5 of the 32 are alleged football violations and that coaches are, quote, confident allegations related to the current staff or secondary violations. In addition, an NCAA source tells SB Nation reporter Bud Elliott that the, quote, vast majority of the football allegations are more than 2 years old. An Ole Miss official told Godfrey that almost all the allegations are women's basketball, track, tonsil, and football from 6 years ago during previous coach Houston Nutt's tenure. And then I jump back into the Crooked Letters and I say, I know now that most of what I was told that day was untrue. I don't know who among Ole Miss representatives thought it would be wise to lie to the multiple members of the national media about an NCAA investigation, the details of which would eventually become public. But I know why they did. When the NOA was received, 2016 National Signing Day, the day when college football recruits announce what school they will be attending, was 2 weeks away. It seems likely that Ole Miss sources lied because the program was trying to hold on to its recruiting class. It doesn't matter who authored the strategy inside of Ole Miss, the athletic department, the coaching staff, or some mix thereof. It would end up being a massive gaffe for everyone in the university. Hugh Freeze instructed every single person that he could And I want you to think for a second, what kind of power a head coach wields at a Southeastern Conference university, especially when they are wildly successful beyond any modern measure that that program has experienced. I want you to think about that level of power, and I want you to think about how many people he could influence. Hugh Freeze instructed that everyone tell a lie. I have thought about this lie because it has affected me in a way for years. I have thought about it tactically. I have thought about it emotionally. I've thought about it rationally. I've done everything I can do. It, of course, makes no sense. And it speaks to the wild, wanton ignorance that this man has. Again, he goes from having good instincts to exercising just incredibly stupid judgment with no sort of, I don't know. I don't know if there's a psychological condition. I don't know if it fits a personality profile with his ego or his insecurities. I don't know. Maybe all the sex stuff ties into it. I don't know. I am not a smart enough man to know that. But I will forever laugh. Now laugh. The man mortgaged his credibility forever to buy himself a finite amount of time in order to pull off something that was never possible. So, one more time. He forever sacrificed his credibility, his reputation, his respect. At least with me, obviously, he's still, like, I see him chumming around with, it's so funny because, like, I see ESPN's Pete Thamel, like, laughing with him on the set of Game Day, and I'm thinking, like, dude, I was there. I was there, dude. I saw your teeth. I guess that's just how it works. TV must do strange things to people. I've done television. I guess I haven't done enough. Maybe it's like a slow gas leak. I'll have to find out one day. Hugh Freeze mortgaged respect, credibility, and character estimation and value branding, we'd probably call it now, forever in this industry to buy himself time to try to complete an impossible task. That impossible task was preserving this signing class. It's impossible because he knew and Ole Miss knew that the hammer was coming from the NCAA and that they would be proven to be liars. We didn't know that, but I can tell you this. I keep tubs in the basement for a reason. It's not to dissolve bodies. That was just a joke. It's in there. Ole Miss, there's what I mean specifically by this is that in hundreds of pages, the inquiries being made, the date that they're being made, the questions that are being asked, and then what's being requested by enforcement to the university to like produce tells you that, oh, like they know. They know where we hid that body. They're like, I don't know if they have the body yet, but like they're going to try and come, like they're going to try and issue a warrant for us. Stretching this thing as far as it'll go. Stretching metaphor. But they knew it was coming and then people were closing in and they lied to buy themselves a couple more weeks. Now, of course, tactically, what I think the difference between Hugh Freeze and literally any other successful Power 5 head coach that has the aspirations that he does is that Power 5 coach, one, probably would have never put himself in this situation because those NCAA reports are just pucked with stupid quotes and stupid behaviors from Farrar, from Freeze, from the university at large. Lack of use of burner phones, right? We talked a lot about that at the time. Just dumb shit. Idiots in a criminal conspiracy. Not a real criminal conspiracy. I don't need footnotes. It's a podcast. That's the thing I'll never get over. Like, dude, you fucked up my career. And it wasn't like you didn't even accomplish the task. You burned all this equity for nothing. Did you know that at the time? Did you talk yourself? These are the questions I want to ask him. So this, you can consider this me officially requesting comment from Auburn. Did you know at the time that you were doomed? Because, like, it's obvious. The university had to have told you. Your lawyer had to have told you. Based on the inquiries that were being made, you can't sit here and tell me I didn't know what enforcement. He did that on the phone to me for 3 months, and I had to take him at face value while I was working on the case. But I know now because, hey, guess what? Surprise. I talked to the NCAA. It's all old news now. The enforcement agents that worked on the case, they left. I've had really polite, pleasant conversations with them. And if you're an Ole Miss fan listening to this, If you have any association with the University of Mississippi, I am here to tell you, on the lives of my children, when your head coach challenged them, it was over. When your head coach put out that tweet, when he stuck his middle finger into the air, spit into the wind, the NCAA literally called a meeting and said, fortify the position and double down. He inspired actual emotional response from NCAA enforcement agents who, just by the nature of the silliness of their job in the modern era, have to operate without a fully functional emotional spectrum because they're running around and punishing kids for taking a couple hundred bucks or getting a t-shirt they weren't supposed to or what the fuck ever the charge might be. They never get the people who actually do the bad things. They punish families and end careers, usually of poor people. So you have to be a little emotionally fucking stunted to have that job. And in that moment, they got angry. You made them angry. That was real. That happened. And that's why there were multiple waves of NOAs. That's why they went after your ass like a junkyard dog. And by the way, that's why when the truth came out that they fucked up, that they had colluded with a rival school to try and build a case against you because they were so fucking angry at you for attacking them publicly. And when I published all of that, which was fact, documents leaked from the NCAA that I wasn't supposed to have, that you weren't supposed to read, it didn't matter. It didn't affect the decision of the Committee on Infractions an iota. An iota. Because they were so angry, they wrote your conviction that day. They wrote your sentence that day, you fucking moron. Did you know that? How did you think you could beat this? Maybe you just weren't thinking. Some of the greatest damage you can do to the people you love in your life, or just people in general, is to act without thinking. It's sometimes the hardest behavior to understand and forgive. But you don't forgive. You just ask for it. So let me tell you what happened to me. My aspiration entering that phase was impossible, equally probably as dumb as the decisions made by Hugh Freeze, although I didn't lie to anybody. I still thought that by virtue of the momentary health of digital media and how much I truly loved and cherished the people I was working with and the way that we approached this sport, the community of readers and listeners that we were building and the way we were able to challenge norms and conventions, obviously the Bagman story being a great example, but also, I mean, just literally any idle Tuesday that Jason Kirk or Spencer Hall or, you know, even Bud in recruiting or Bill with statistics, like it, we loved being there. We loved changing it. It was designed, as Spencer called it like a decade ago, to be the appreciation machine. And appreciation does not mean that you turn a blind eye to the bad parts of it. If anything, it teaches you to acknowledge it, see it through, try and work to make it better, and then persevere with that passion, which is maybe this is sort of the kind of the lodestar for me right now in dumping out this confession. Because I have to give all of this away. I have to give this energy away, and I have to give all this thought away. I got to get rid of it, and I have to forgive this son of a bitch because I got to move on. At the time, I was going to hold steady with news breaking reporters and long form writers, both. I wanted to do both, and I wanted to occupy the spaces they did in terms of sourcing, credentialing, esteem, professional consideration, and be counterculture at the same time. Not possible. Stupid man. That's okay now. I understand that. What happened to me was I had willingly placed a target on my back riding Bagman. For the better part of a year and a half after Bagman was released, the SEC specifically set out to discredit me and my work and why I did it, and that was all fabricated. On three different occasions, I had colleagues, one of whom I like genuinely really respected and probably would have, like, if he would have hired me at his place, I would have followed him. And I'm not naming names because that's not my, I don't have permission to do that. Said, hey, I saw the SEC spokespeople and the story came up, or it came up over dinner or whatever, and they said you made it all up. So they actively worked to discredit me. And this isn't the Banned from Feinbaum story, but I guess it's sort of the genesis of it. So I had a bullseye to begin with. But then I committed the cardinal sin inadvertently of becoming a mouthpiece for my alma mater, which is the cardinal sin of the Southeastern United States of America in sports media. That's it. There's no sin higher. That's it. I don't care if you're caught with 1,000 hookers. I was trying to think of old colloquialisms, but they were all probably a little too off color for 2023 from rednecks, but like, that's it. I could have skied down a hill of cocaine with various sex workers, and it would have been far less impactful on my career than wearing that scarlet letter of stumping for your alma mater as a reporter, as a capital J journalist. And that's what happened to me. More importantly to me now, and even then, believe it or not, a sizable ego at the time, I try and keep it down now, but I swear to you, even more importantly then, was to tarnish the work. And I was held to account for two big reasons. Obviously, the Bagman piece, the NCAA didn't like me, enforcement didn't like me, the SEC didn't like me. But the name of the college on my degree, that's why I was held to account. I think even more than the first part. I have friends who worked on Crooked Letters who went on to work in more mainstream establishments, legacy media, we call it. As recently as I think a year or two ago, someone was like, oh, hey, you worked on that Bagman thing. Like, that's all made up, right? There is a... I made that, and I'm okay with that. I'm so okay with that. Bagman changed my career for the positive. This changed it for the negative. So I'm saying all this to cop to the fact that I'm not an innocent lamb. I had a very long and healthy history of telling authority to fuck itself sideways, okay? I admit that. But this killed the work. It just killed the work. And it was used... Once it was discovered that Freeze... Well, Ole Miss... had lied to all these reporters... You know, it's funny, like... Bruce Feldman... reported the same thing. Other friends of mine, some of whom aren't here anymore, reported the same thing. The nails in the wood came from me, particularly from a group of very pro NCAA enforcement media who set about echoing the work of the SEC PR and the NCAA's PR. I brought this on myself because I told them all that they were wrong and they should fuck themselves and that they were bad for the sport. I created the enemies. I did it. I cannot sit here and lay down and feel and portray myself as a victim. I will not. But I also inadvertently reported this, and Hugh Freeze, my guy, you handed them all howitzers. Hugh Freeze made me a liar. And I'll never get an apology out of that, because he'll never claim responsibility. And I could sit here and tell you a more mature part of my life that, oh, you know, this ding in my reputation didn't bother me. That's not true. I think that's evident by me talking today. Back then, man, I was furious. I was so embarrassed. I'm an alumnus, so I was painted as state media. Pardon that pun. I was painted as a mouthpiece, and that was disgusting to me. My entire professional journalism career has been dedicated to, even if I have to hold the bomb in my hands as it goes off, what is honesty? I don't fear an unnamed source or an anonymous quote. If I know it's the truth and I can go in front of my God and say, this is the truth, I will make the deal to protect the person who told me. But I lied, inadvertently, I guess. 5 fucking people at Ole Miss told me that lie. And I can take all 5 of them and draw them back to Hugh Freeze. After the fact, and after it was exposed as a lie, when Hugh Freeze found out I was making a documentary, the genesis of his newfound buddy-buddy relationship with me and his texting with me was to make sure that he never knew any of this stuff was going on. So no, he's not going to apologize. He kept lying. He begged me for weeks on the phone and via text message, begged me to convey that he had no involvement in any of this. Of course, this was in between just like him bumming around Oxford as an unemployed, the most famous unemployed person in the entire state, by spending his days at a golf course at the country club in Oxford, which, by the way, if you've never visited, is the epitome of a fishbowl. It's not like you're not going to get recognized if you go to the fucking gas station, let alone the one country club with the golf course. Sorry, the one country club, comma, and the one golf course. I think there's a public course. I don't golf. He would literally hang out there and criticize the play calling of Matt Lucas, former assistant coach, who was taking over this program in shambles. Ultimately, this is my fault. Ultimately, this is my fault. Going back to when I initially started all this and I was able to work my ass off and fuck my family up and physically hurt myself by working too much and make myself physically ill all the time. And completely invert the hierarchy of responsibilities and just what's important in your life. I had a son who was 3 at the time and a pregnant wife. And then another son that was born during all this. And I have gaps. That's the most shameful thing I can say to you. I have gaps. For what? For what? The 80 grand a year I made? A higher Twitter profile? No, that's none of that. It wasn't that. Trust me. I don't even know if I was making 80 grand then, by the way. I thought I was doing this because I was going to change it. Most good reporters will lie to you and say that they're again towing this invisible line as the fourth estate. But the ones who are really passionate on it, they don't write and they don't pour themselves in and they don't break themselves down just to work as some sort of omniscient objective voice. That's not what they do. That's not why I'm telling you they don't do it. They do it because they believe what they're doing is important. Advocacy has existed in journalism as long as there's been a public forum and a means of mass communication. That's the point of mass communication, is to advocate for something. It was my fault thinking that anything would change from what I wrote or what I made on that stupid TV show that I didn't have control of, or that I would affect or bring down the NCAA because it's an obvious, crooked, silly, stupid, hurtful thing. And that everyone who was half awake in the national media gave it a pass or was enabled by them or mouthpieced for them. I was going to change all that. That was my fault for thinking that. Freeze's official reasoning for firing was a pattern of personal misconduct. That's what's in the legal docs. And the revelation was just, the university issued cell phone. That was it. It was Capone on taxes. We don't even know if he got the hand jobs. That's the truth. We just know that he contacted the escort. using a phone whose logs could be discovered publicly, and they were. This was Al Capone on taxes. What's funny is that this being the reason he was fired, the far, far more embarrassing thing is why he's at Auburn today. Because chasing a hooker or doing it, like, that doesn't affect your show cause status. And if you don't, look, there is, it's a binary metric. It is harder to get hired for level one violations in recruiting than it is for anything that went on at Baylor. So if multiple women get raped under your watch, as long as the woman being raped didn't leave the athlete a 20 afterwards, and I'm being fucking honest, you can probably get another job after this. That's the truth. So him going down for the escorts saved his career. Kind of made a face as I said that, but that's welcome to the logic. If you have the time or the interest, maybe you live in Tuscaloosa. This isn't a secret. You can file a FOIA in the state of Mississippi and get the entirety of the text message histories and the call logs. It's still out there. People at Auburn, in the vetting process in the week before Thanksgiving, when there was this idea of like, well, Lane is not fully committing. Lane keeps hedging. What if Freeze is a reality? When they did the checks, I still don't understand how Auburn said they did the checks on Freeze, because it's still out there. You can go pull all this. What I'm telling you is this. The reporter, Steve Robertson, the Mississippi State reporter, he was handed this information by Thomas Mars, the famous lawyer who was representing Houston Nutt at the time, who himself was trying to resurrect his career and didn't want to bear the brunt of Hugh Freeze's lies. But the totality of those phone records, and Steve said this to me, it's huge. Like, anyone is free to keep going through those phone records if they want, matching those numbers to other escort services or to private citizens, that you could at least ask the question, why are you in contact on this date and why did you call this person at that time? I don't know what I, like, part of the reason I'm here to forgive this man today is that eventually you are the fool. Not him, you. You're the fool. This man is so well conditioned to lie, right? He's the guy who was like, he tweeted out, I've got it pulled up here, January 21st of 16, been a great week of recruiting, but I'm glad to see my girls and be back in Oxford for the weekend. 3 hours earlier, he'd been on the phone with a hooker. Or an escort, sorry, on the university phone. A colleague of mine who was a reporter at Ole Miss at the time kind of explained it, because he lived in Oxford, was like, sort of explained it maybe as this sort of, this is what happens when you, it's almost like a science experiment, hand of God kind of thing. Like, if you could look down a little bottle universe and affect it and play God, it's like, what if you took this almost, like, nearly never noticed good old boy, this homely good old boy, and afford him complete and total power almost instantaneously? When you look at his career trajectory, right? He's like an Ed Orgeron sycophant, and then he goes to Lambeth, which you don't even know where that is, and it doesn't exist anymore. That's true. 1 year at A-State. Boom, he's there, right? Because that was always cited by the athletic director. Well, that was the reason why he made all those mistakes, is we hired someone who was too inexperienced. And I was like, well, you also hired him because he was the best available candidate at the time. What does that say about you? What if you took that person and gave them everything they ever wanted as fast as humanly possible, with the problems too? The sexual escapades... It's just I don't know. It's like you woke up one morning and you had wings that you never had. You'd probably want to flap them. I guess. I have a memory in this process of when the interim head coach, Matt Luke, I've never told this story before, was hired. At his hiring press conference, we were shooting foul play. And then afterwards, after the formal press conference, there's this sort of milling about, and it was in the team meeting room, so it's like kind of movie theater style seating where the athletes normally sit. That's where the media sits at the bottom, is the athletic director, Ross Bjork, the coach, Matt Luke. Matt Luke, also a alumnus of the University of Mississippi, right? A couple years prior as an O-line coach, he had been kind of maybe like, I think he was in the running for the Troy job. I don't even know. This would have been like when Neil Brown got it. And then Luke, in the build up to the freeze undoing, was recruited by Will Muschamp to be the offensive line. He's a really good O-line coach. He's a fucking good football coach too. Luke was recruited by Will Muschamp to go to South Carolina. And although they didn't really have it at the time, Ross Bjork raised the money to match the South Carolina offer and basically said to Matt, I have to do this because I need an interim head coach. Because they knew. They didn't probably know about the hand job stuff because of the cell phone records, because that was being done by a different attorney. But at the time, looking around, they knew. They knew that like this thing was headed south. They're probably going to need an interim head coach. And there was no one else on that staff that they trusted or believed could do it. Matt Luke walked up to me and like, weirdly, in this terrible circumstance, I mean, it's not like LBJ being sworn in necessarily, but like, it's pretty terrible circumstances, but it's also the best day of your professional life, because this is a guy who grows up in Mississippi, his family played at Ole Miss, like, this dude's a rebel from the cradle, and now you're the head coach. You didn't spend 6 years at Troy or whatever, like you just you fall into this in this wild situation. He walked up and he shook my hand really hard, and he put his hand on my shoulder, and he said, I want to thank you for what you're doing for your university. And I wanted to die. I wanted to die. I was living in a rental house. I was working all the time with cameras on me, literally. I couldn't figure out in that moment if it was by my own hand or there was someone I could blame. I had become everything I hated about the media and college football and the industry. I wanted to die. I wanted to be someone else. I wanted to go home to my wife who I like, to my wife and newborn and other child, and I wanted to start anew. And I'm not really qualified to do anything else. I wanted to die when he said that. I think Luke was hapless. He's a very smart man now. I think he was also made victim by Freeze maybe more times than he'll ever realize. Or maybe he's just at peace with it too. I think that regardless of what he said to me at the time, I have a lot of respect for him having the cognizance to walk away from an industry that's gone sideways on the coaching front. I get that. I respect that. He was loudly criticized by Hugh Freeze for being a head coach. And to locals, anyone in Oxford who would listen, Hugh Freeze would tell him how smart he was. Did you know that he sat at the Committee on Infractions for 2.5 days in Cincinnati, Ohio? Technically, it was in Kentucky on the other side of the water. While his team coaches players already sort of stripped down by the enforcement punishment, were prepping to go to Cal to play that week. And what they were trying to do with the Cal thing was actually fly out a little bit early and give them a little bit of an experience, because they knew they weren't going to a bowl that year. And so that was just the best thing they could cobble together, was like, well, you take them to San Francisco for the day, I guess, or something. But he had to sit in Cincinnati that week, not prep for the game. Adequately, I would say, or not prep as much as probably Cal got to prep. That man was handed a broken dream job with an impossible task in front of it. But everybody gets handed something in life. It's not always perfect. That wasn't the low point with me and my alma mater. The low point, and this doesn't involve Hugh Freeze, So let's talk about Ross Bjork. Let's talk about former assistant AD Michael Thompson. Let's talk about Ole Miss for a second. The name on the diploma. The worst character, the worst behavior. I was sitting in a parking lot on West Jackson Avenue, the parking lot of a shopping center, with a cameraman, and I got a phone call from a high-ranking individual at Ole Miss who was working on an educated guess, because this individual I had not engaged in any kind of horse trading with as far as information, because I fundamentally didn't trust him and didn't like him. Don't like him, active tense. He sat on the phone with me in this newfound sort of buddy-buddyism and begged me to change the publication of the story that I was working on. It was, and the reason he knew I had the information was because it came out of the committee that Mississippi State had been involved, that Mississippi State boosters had given Leo Lewis money. It, again, you got to read Crooked Letters. All the revelations about Mississippi State's involvement, they happened behind closed doors in Covington, Kentucky in like September. And so just a handful of people in the world took that information and held on to it for those weeks and weeks and weeks. And so I had that information from the room. I was there. They just didn't know it. And then I had the documentation. Most of that was oral, but I had the other documentation that was submitted. So I had all this information from multiple parties. Like, I, to this day, I think that some of the people who spoke to me on background as confidential sources don't realize I also spoke to people who were in the room with them. And I'm proud of that. That's good. That's fucking good work. I was raised by an FBI agent. I feel proud of that work. It was hard to do. But I was cajoled, and they begged me on the phone that day in the parking lot to release the information against Mississippi State. But they wanted me to do it specifically during the hiring press conference of Joe Moorhead at Mississippi State. They were wounded animals just trying, looking for something to bite as they faded out. This is my alma mater, name on the degree. Now, you can say anything you want to say about Dan Mullen, and it's in the story. He skated. I can't do anything about that. Obviously, we're talking about Hugh Freeze. You can say whatever you want about the various Mississippi State boosters. They did the same thing Ole Miss did. And I established years prior that I don't care that boosters pay people. All right? The idea that Mississippi State was a victim of all... Like, Dan Mullen engineered this because he was getting his ass waxed by a far more enigmatic and crooked head coach. Bottom line. History ends up siding with me because Dan Mullen then goes on to Florida and still does not understand how to recruit elite at an elite manner in an elite way. That's how you get elite. And so the product that's on the field in 2023 at Florida is still suffering from that. So, like, history proved me right inadvertently. John Cohen knew this, what was going on, who's now the athletic director at Auburn. He knew that Mullen was trying his best to squeal like a pig and put his players in harm's way professionally and personally. He had to have known. John Cohen has more knowledge of this story than I do. So I sat in that parking lot and I listened to this guy's sales pitch as if, again, I'm sitting here at the very bottom of my career, in my opinion, emotionally, psychologically. And I'm being begged by an Ole Miss official to manipulate the timing in public. We were holding aspects of the story because we had to. We're trying to verify things. Also, we weren't going to go when someone else told us to. That's not how it works. We had to put it all together and wait for... We also had to wait for the notice to come out to confirm some things. The idea that I would... I don't know if I'm still pissed off about the idea that I would do that for him or that they thought they could ask. Because again, it's just like the Matt Luke handshake. Thank you for what you're doing. And I want to die. So that was the lowest point of my career. And I told him, in a slightly more diplomatic manner, thinking I might have to, again, not knowing who I would have to go back and try and politic for the television show to get people on camera to basically, let's just say, kick rocks and not fuck himself. Although I wish I, at the time, I would have just told him to fuck himself. I really do. The piece that I'm talking about ultimately comes out a couple days later. Dan Mullen's already the head coach at Florida. It was November 30th, 2017. It's also still up on SB Nation. So I think about Ole Miss, too. And the bottom line is that Bjork and Thompson and the rest of the leadership at that university, there's only two things that could be possible here. That they knew about Hugh Freeze and these fatally flawed plans that were going to hurt a ton of people they were lying to, who would then turn around, like myself, and risk their own credibility and their job status to convey information that was told to them, you know, in trust and confidentiality as confidential sources. So they knew that that plan was in place, and they're guilty for not intervening, or it's what they claim. And they didn't know what was going on with their head football coach. They didn't know what was going on with their football program. They didn't know what was going on in recruiting. They didn't know what every single person in the tiny, tiny, tiny velvet ditch of Oxford, Mississippi was talking about almost every fucking day. At every golf course, at every country club, in every restaurant, in every private gathering where fucking Bjork and Thompson sat and asked people for money, that they just didn't happen to hear the chatter. If that's the case, if that's the truth you want to tell, you, sirs, were perfect. Perfect for Texas A&M. Because they needed a sock puppet to play opposite the ego of Jimbo Fisher. So well done. It's only one of two truths. You knew, and you're guilty too. Maybe you enabled it in the beginning. There's a story from an embed that Andy Staples did for Sports Illustrated when Kandichi signs that signing class that includes Laramie Tunsil. He embedded at Ole Miss the day it happened. There's an anecdote in there that always stuck out. At the time, I was like, damn, that's a good piece of character work in writing. Like, oh, that really takes you into the scene. It doesn't sound rehearsed. It doesn't sound like a quote. It's like a piece of a scene. And that's what you want in an embed. You want to really take the reader into the space and the informal little edges of it. And it makes it real. It makes it feel right. There's a scene in there as the big signees are coming in on the 2013 signing day, and like everything that's Ole Miss fans have basically ever wanted is happening. There's a scene where Bjork's standing in the back of the room, the war room with the coaches, and he sort of adjusts his tie or his jacket. And I'm recalling this from memory. And he says, well, time to go raise some more money. As a quip. And in Staples' piece, an assistant coach turns around and says, you're welcome. Tell me you fucking didn't know. Tell me you didn't. Look me in the eye again. Because it's been about 6 years since you've done it. And tell me you didn't know. You built the beast. You let it out. None of you can control it. Because the beast is kind of stupid. He's really good at three or four things. But you had no idea how unruly it got and how sloppy it was. Or you didn't know, Russ. Either way, you're perfect for the Aggies. You're exactly what Fisher wanted. Take it as a compliment. One funny thing I had in my notes. You know, Freeze would browbeat his players on character concerns. And one of the cardinal sins he committed that I've heard about for years after the fact, if you're still listening, War Eagle, was that he had an imbalanced locker room. What that means is he did not treat all of his players the same. That is not a trope. That's a real thing. If you don't have a balanced locker room and your backup left guard knows that that wide receiver number one doesn't have to do this conditioning, doesn't have to go to this meeting, doesn't, like, it will break your fucking locker room so fast. You have no idea. That's like an axiom that holds
like going back to the 60s and 70s. Like, it's one of the things that kind of always stays true in that dynamic. So he was terrible about that. Because he would promise the world to these kids and he didn't understand how to balance and work a room. And it's really anathema to the Saban stuff. If you go and read the Saban, sort of an autobiography, I wouldn't call it an autobiography, but it's the book Saban wrote after LSU won the title in 03. How good do you want to be? It's written sort of in the framework of like a business. Do you call it business self-help? I mean, that's kind of what it is. Like, you know, hey, you're managing a pool cleaning company with 5 employees. You want to use the Nick Saban method of success to be a better business. That's kind of the way it's written. And he talks about sort of the balance of everything and keeping people on equal footing. The diplomacy of it, the inherent respect that it commands, but also the respect that it creates, all this stuff. And like, look, the Saban mythos is beyond inflated, but there's also a lot of just fundamental truths in there. He didn't invent them. He just, I think, practiced them with a sort of like trad Catholic rigidity. He may be a trad Catholic. But Freeze didn't know what he didn't know because, again, he just vaulted into this job and made all these silly mistakes habitually based off of either ego or ignorance or both that undid his natural abilities as a coach and recruiter. But the funny thing is, he would browbeat players all the time in a locker room where they already knew, well, coach likes him more than me, so why the fuck am I listening to this? About staying out late drinking, messing around with women. He was doing the same thing at the same time, sometimes in the same bars. To the point where, like, it's the world's sickest version of a meet cute movie. It's like the fucking reboot of Sliding Doors no one ever wanted. In that Hugh Freeze was ducking in and out. It's Oxford, Mississippi, y'all. There's like 12 places you're gonna go. Tops. He was pulling this sort of Baptist beer shtick, going out and drinking, you know, with the door shut at the bar before it opens, or in the back room, that kind of stuff. There are a lot of people that believe he was going to get fired for conduct, regardless of the phone records. In other words, that there was going to be an extramarital affair or that was not related to the escorts, or that they predicted this stuff. That's what people said at the time. Or he was going to get caught maybe in like a low stakes DUI situation, something. Because a lot of people who don't grow up or who grow up with alcohol restricted and then they do it and they try and hide it, that increases the chances of you driving drunk, right? Because you're trying to conceal something. You can't just call a cab, can't leave your car up, you know, up by the restaurant, that kind of thing. But he would chastise people for this exact lack of self-discipline that he was showing in the same spaces. He is a weak man. He has displayed zero change. And everything that he's capable of doing positively, I believe will happen again at Auburn. Everything he is capable of doing negatively, I believe will happen again at Auburn. When pressure mounts, and I had someone at Auburn just paint this scary story. What happens to a man with the second most important job in the state right now when Alabama fans cast that eye over? What happens to a man who's shown already, this is how you take me down, this is where I'm weak, this is what I'll bite on, these are my tendencies, these are my tells? What happens when you do upset Auburn? Or Alabama, I'm sorry. When Auburn upsets Alabama, what happens when that leaves a little bitter taste in the mouths of previously fat and sated and happy Alabama fans who are spoiled beyond belief by the riches of an unforeseen dynasty, or a dynasty that I would say the likes of which we couldn't have predicted? They have been happy. They have been in an opium dream for the better part of a decade. That doesn't mean they've changed. What happens? They're still an SEC fan base. What happens? And They're the SEC fan base. They're the SEC fan base. What happens when they decide to get to work on you, Hugh? when pressure mounts, I have no reason to say, as an educated man and someone who's familiar with you, that you will not revert to form. So in closing, the only way that I could get all this out is to leave it with you listening, or someone other than me. It doesn't feel like it matters anymore now that I've said it. In fact, it feels like it matters less. Look at the recent hires in sports. Look at Ole Miss, who hired Chris Beard. Bobby Petrino's back in the SEC. I believe he'll win, and he will provide you the consistency that I have detailed at length. But I have to forgive you, Hugh, because I don't want to hate football anymore. And I can accidentally hate all of it when I think about you. So, for my own sake, hopefully for the sake of you still listening, Hugh Freeze, you are forgiven. You are not forgotten. You are not going to enjoy the benefit of any doubt by any rational, breathing human being for the rest of my life. However, you will certainly still enjoy the spoils and benefits of being an SEC head coach. I can't change that. Maybe it's not my job to do that. We all have to take a step back and figure out what role we play in the stuff in creating the things we don't like about college football, and whether or not we can keep going inside the appreciation machine if those things still foster as a byproduct. I don't know. But I know that the only way for me to stop worrying about this and to move on with my career is to forgive you. Because that's the only path to peace available. And I want to figure out if I can create from a calm place. You are not forgotten. And I know who you are. But I am going to give you the one thing that you cannot give so many people that you have hurt, lied to, continually lied to. And that is forgiveness. You are forgiven.